Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, an online cookbook, lectures and workshops, articles and essays, this podcast, a new cookbook called The Joy of Vegan Baking, and a cooking DVD. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, CompassionateCooks.com. Hi, everybody. How are you doing? I periodically look at my iTunes page, and I'm just amazed by all of your accolades and recommendations for people to listen. Thank you so much for helping to spread the word. Incidentally, if you search for vegan on iTunes in their podcast directory and sort by popularity, our podcast, Vegetarian Food for Thought, comes up as the number one podcast. That's really exciting stuff. I just want to get the message out to as many people as possible, so I'm just glad that you're able to help spread the word. You can further help by linking to CompassionateCooks.com from your blogs, from your MySpace pages, from your websites, and of course by subscribing. It's one thing to just download each episode as they come in, and it's quite another to subscribe. Subscriptions are what iTunes and other podcatchers use to determine the popularity of a podcast. And as they see subscriptions grow steadily for a particular podcast, it increases the chances that they'll feature us. So I encourage you to subscribe to the podcast, which you can do through iTunes or any other podcatcher. If you went to CompassionateCooks.com and clicked on Listen to Our Podcast, it'll bring you to a page that lists all of our episodes. And on that page, you'll see a number of options through which you can subscribe. The other benefit is that new episodes will automatically be downloaded for you, so you don't have to continually check to see if a new episode has been posted. Speaking of supporting this podcast, I just want to send a huge thank you to Miles Loretta. He's a listener who wanted desperately to help me make the sound quality of the podcast as high and consistent as possible. I know some older episodes have some audio issues, and I may have to re-record them, but at least moving forward, Miles has come on board to increase the sound quality of subsequent episodes, including this one and a couple before this one, and it really means so much to me to have his help. So thank you very much, Miles. I continue to receive just absolutely remarkable emails from so many of you out there telling me about the awakenings you're having and the transformations you're experiencing. You can read these too. If you go to CompassionateCooks.com and click on Kind Words in the center of the homepage, read these comments. They are just amazing. You blow me away. Anyway, for me, the success of this podcast is measured by those responses that I get from all of you listeners. Something's working here, and it thrills me to no end. Because of this success, I'm focusing on the podcast more than I ever expected I would, more than I ever thought I would, and I'm putting a lot of my energy and time into producing weekly episodes, which demands a lot of time and a lot of research and a lot of writing. I do this podcast for you, and I plan on continuing to do it as long as possible, but I really need your help. I value all of the aspects of my work, and I continually juggle the cooking classes that I teach, the articles and blogs that I write, the emails that I answer, the lectures that I give, the DVD and the button and recipe orders that I fulfill, and my new cookbook that I just got the advanced copy, but it's coming out very soon, and it requires a lot of time and energy to market, and I'm still working on the launch of my 30-day vegetarian challenge. Each of these aspects of Compassionate Cooks is vital, but because of the response to this podcast, it's something that's very close to my heart right now, and it requires vast amounts of energy and time. If I want to continue at this pace and not compromise on the quality, I really need the help of those who benefit from this work. And I'm really grateful to every one of you who has ever sponsored this podcast or who continues to sponsor this podcast through their monthly contributions. I know we have a lot of listeners out there, and I offer a number of different sponsorship opportunities. You can do $5 a month or $10 a month, or certainly contribute whatever amount you feel compelled to. But I figure with the number of listeners who are getting something out of this podcast, if every one of you committed to just $5 or $10 a month, it would go a long way in helping me continue this work. And if there's a time where I have to really focus on the podcast and not do something else, this would enable me to do that. I feel like public radio during their pledge drives, but it's really true. $5 a month for an individual or $10 a month for an individual is not very much. But if everybody supports this work collectively, it would go a long way in helping me use this medium as a way to empower people and to save animals. That's why I do what I do. And if you find any value in what you hear each week, I just encourage you to support this podcast. On the document I just mentioned, the one I call Kind Words, that you can see on my website, there are currently 14 pages worth of comments from people, and it's not even complete. And I tell you this not to toot my own horn. I don't even have a horn. I tell you this to give you hope and to demonstrate that this podcast is working. Non-vegetarians are becoming vegetarian and vegan. Vegetarians are becoming vegan, and vegans are finding their voices and feeling empowered. That's the kind of thing I'm hearing from people every day. So that's all I'm saying. I think this is an amazing medium for getting this message out there. And until the day that commercial radio picks me up and lets me say all of these things, I need your help to continue. Does that make sense? And if that's not enough, as sponsors, I send you recipes of your choosing right off the bat, and monthly sponsors receive a packet every 3 months. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I know that was a very long appeal, but I needed to tell you what was going on. So there you have it, and thank you. So if you want to sponsor the podcast, just go to compassionatecooks.com and click on sponsor the podcast. Thank you so much. So speaking of sponsors, I have a very special email to share with you that is related to the topic today and should also give you ideas about how to get involved yourself. It's from today's sponsor, Adina Kling, who originally wrote to me many months ago to tell me, quote, the impact your podcast have had in my life. She wrote to tell me about a rare muscle disease she had been diagnosed with a few years before, and that one of the factors was a carnitine deficiency. She had been vegetarian for 25 years and vegan for a short time, and her doctor was strongly recommending that she start eating meat. And as I do with the more nutrition-oriented questions I get, I referred her question to my friend and colleague, registered dietitian and PhD, Tim Raddick, who offered some suggestions, namely to take a carnitine supplement. Adina had started to eat eggs, which she really didn't want to do, but she stopped and focused just on eating healthfully and taking the supplement. And she has reported to me that, quote, I feel better than I have in years and I'm doing great. But she also had more to say about why she's sponsoring this podcast. And here's what she wrote. I'm sure you can detect her wonderful enthusiasm in her email here. Quote, the truth, as corny as it sounds, Colleen, is that your consciousness-raising show has changed my life. I'm completely vegan and eating healthier than I ever have. I feel so clear about the impact of my food choices on the life of innocent animals who have as much right to live their life to its fullest potential as I do. My partner and I have always fostered, abused, and neglected dogs, bunnies, birds, and truthfully have kept a lot of them, too, and have been, quote, tuned into the issues around animal rights. But lately, I must confess, I've been struggling more than usual with a lot of sadness and anguish around my new awareness of the suffering of farmed animals. For whatever reason, I just didn't get it before or allow myself to get it. I suppose my heart is more open, and with that, as I've heard you say, comes all of it, the joy, the suffering, the heartbreak and all. I know I need to find more positive outlets so I feel I'm making an impact for the animals. Staying stuck in the sadness of it all sure isn't going to serve animals or myself. Well, Adina did not stay stuck in the sadness at all. That email was from several months ago, and recently when she sent me her sponsorship, she also shared with me all the wonderful things that she and her partner are doing for animals. She wrote, quote, prior to December of 2006, I had been a 25-year vegetarian, but intermittent vegan. My partner, Trish, and I found it challenging to remain vegan without a supportive network and community. Since listening to your podcast, we've taken your suggestions to heart, and here's how we've changed just since December 2006. We've joined a vegan meetup in Ann Arbor and met some amazing people. We're hosting a monthly vegan potluck at our home. We've devoured books and your website info on vegan nutrition, cookbooks, and recipes. We're baking vegan dog biscuits that we sell at our weekly artists market and wherever else we can, and all the benefits and proceeds all go to an animal rescue organization. We are volunteering to table or speak and other ways we can help vegan or animal rights causes. And we've committed to each other that for birthdays and holidays, we will sponsor a farm animal from our local farmed sanctuary, Sasha Farm, instead of buying more stuff. Hello. If that doesn't give you some inspiration and ideas, I don't know what will. So thank you so much, Adina, for your amazing work in the world and for your sponsorship. And Adina also said that she wanted to make it clear that she wasn't tooting her horn by telling me all of these things. And she didn't have to tell me that. I knew that. And I just think it's really wonderful to share with you the kinds of things that other activists are doing. Adina wanted to dedicate her sponsorship to her, quote, wonderful partner of 17 years, Trish. Adina wrote, quote, Trish has been an animal activist all of her life, and her true love and compassion for all creatures has been an inspiration to me. No one would know because she does this in her own quiet way. She doesn't advertise her efforts. But if there's a bird, squirrel, dog, cat, or any other creature that needs rescue or help, she's there. Because of her, we rescue and adopt what we call the Charlie Brown Christmas tree animals, the ones most people would find unadoptable, like Buddha, our blind, physically challenged, and disabled bunny with the best personality in the world, plus many more. Trish, thank you for sharing my life for 17 years and being the most compassionate and loving person I know. So I think we're having a little love fest. We've done these before. They're so moving. Thank you so much, Adina. I thought you would appreciate hearing Adina's story and hearing about the work that everyone can do in their own relationships. And relationships is the topic of today's episode. How's that for a segue, huh? Today, our topic is how to cope when you are a vegetarian or vegan in a relationship with a meat eater. There are a lot of different things I want to say about this topic, and because it was getting rather long as I started to write and formulate my ideas, I thought I would break it up into two parts. So consider this part one. In this first part, I want to first examine the mentality of meat eating and how it can keep us blocked and closed off. If we can understand why someone behaves in a certain way, it may help us figure out the best strategy for coping in a mixed relationship where one person is vegetarian or vegan and the other is not. I may have said this before, but I do think one of the most important things vegans can do is to remember their own story so that they don't forget where they came from, so they don't forget that they too were once unaware or blocked or perhaps even resistant themselves. When someone finds out that I'm vegan and they know I'm married, they invariably ask me if my husband is vegan. I say yes. Then they ask if he was vegan before he met me. I say no. Then they usually say something like, so you converted him? And I say, well, no. I don't like the word converted because it implies that I set out with some evangelical agenda to make him do something I wanted him to do. So I don't believe I converted him. But if you were to ask me if I was the person in his life who inspired him, then I would say, yes, I happen to be the person in his life who was privy to the information about veganism, and I shared my enthusiasm and devastation with him. And he was persuaded by the same arguments as I was, and he became vegan not long after I did. In fact, years before that, he even stopped eating land animals after we were together for a short time, but he became vegan not long after I did. But that's the way relationships work. I mean, that's why we come together, I believe, to enrich each other's lives, to become better people, to learn more, to evolve, to inspire each other. I think sometimes when people ask if I, quote, converted David, they want to somehow invalidate that it was David's decision. They want to somehow invalidate that his being vegan is his own decision, his own thing. And I know that there are probably some people who think that David's just doing it for me, which I find really insulting to David. He does have his own mind and he does have his own conscience. David learns things from me in our relationship, and I learn things from him in our relationship. I sparked in him a love of film that he didn't have before, and he sparked in me a love of certain musicians and music that I didn't have before I knew him. Does that mean that his love of film inspired by me isn't real, isn't authentic, isn't valid because I was the one who introduced him to it? Or that my love of certain music isn't real because he's the one who introduced me to it? Of course not. We come together in relationships, romantic or otherwise, to become better people. And thank goodness I'm not the same person I was when I first met David 12 and a half years ago. Relationships aren't supposed to be static. That's what I believe, anyway. The other thing people ask me is, would you be with David if he weren't vegan? Would you be able to be with someone who wasn't vegan? And of course, it's hard for me to answer this because David is vegan. But I'm not with David because he's vegan. I'm with him because he's open and kind and compassionate. So his being vegan in a way is just a byproduct of those things. The more accurate question would be, would you be able to be with someone who's closed and resistant and unwilling to change? And my answer to that question would be no. Now, I realize that I just said that being vegan is a byproduct of being compassionate, and I want to make it clear that what I'm not saying is that people who are not vegan yet are not compassionate people. But I do believe they're blocked. I believe that the extent to which we are able to compartmentalize our emotions, we're blocked. If we can love one kind of animal and eat another, we're blocked. Even more than that, if we're so blocked that we can go to the zoo and pet a cow and then eat a hamburger, there's clearly a disconnect there. There's clearly the presence of what experts would call cognitive dissonance. And to illustrate this idea, let's look at the suggestion of some writers, such as Carol Adams, that we perceive meat eaters as blocked vegetarians. The idea is that instead of perceiving meat eaters as just that, we perceive meat eaters as blocked vegetarians. Now, I realize at the sound of that phrase, some of you, possibly some of you who are not vegan yet, may think that it sounds arrogant, but just stick with me here. I really like this notion because of what I just said, because I do believe that to experience this cognitive dissonance is to be blocked, and because I've seen so many people have such powerful moments of awakening regarding our treatment of animals that indicates to me that the compassion, the connection, the truth was there all along, but it was blocked, as it were, by all the speciesist messaging that we get from day one that keeps us numb and unaware. I believe that when we learn about what happens to animals and then experience this profound awakening, it's almost like you aren't learning something new as much as you're having something revealed to you that was always already there. Does that make sense? It's like it's all there inside of us, but it's covered up, it's veiled, it's blocked. I mean, the specifics of the animal torture and abuse may not be there. You may not have known that before, but the sense that something is very wrong when we eat animals and that we're part of it is what's always lingering beneath the surface. And you're going to love this. The word reveal means just that. It means to uncover. If you break this word down, it comes from the Latin word meaning revelare. Re in revelare. Re means the opposite of. And velare means to cover or to veil. So to reveal something, you literally lift the veil. You uncover what's underneath it. I love that. So that's why I really like the idea of perceiving meat eaters as blocked vegetarians or not yet vegetarians. Because of this, most people put their hands over their ears and close their eyes and don't want to see or hear about the way the animals suffer who are raised and killed for human consumption. In fact, they don't even want to hear the words kill or blood or carcass or corpse, vein, slaughter, dead, flesh, secretion, etc. And they arrange their lives neatly in such a way that they never have to confront these things. Many of their friends are meat eaters, their neighbors are meat eaters, and they take great pride in the steaks they can cook and the fish they can grill. The cooking shows they watch never upset their comfort level. And as if there aren't enough animals cooking in pots and pans on those shows, the commercials for these shows advertise even more carnage. The supermarkets they shop in prominently display the bodies of dead animals, but call them such desensitized, de-animalized names as poultry, pork, steak, beef, bacon, chuck, ground round, ham, tenderloin, sausage, and T-bone. The billboards they see when they drive home encourage them to buy more of these body parts, and the radio commercials that play instill this idea even more, just in case they miss the last billboard. The doctor they go to tells them they need meat for protein, though the doctor is himself on cholesterol-lowering medication, and the circus they take their kids to on the weekends serves up juicy hamburgers and ketchup-laced hot dogs. And when the kids ask what a hot dog is made with, they say pork. And if the kid figures out it's actually an animal, they tell them, yes, but animals were made for humans. That's the way of the food chain. And besides, just read the Bible. It says it right there in black and white. And then, as they're walking out of the circus, promising the kids they'll take them to the zoo next weekend, they see an activist wearing a Be Kind to Animals, Don't Eat Them shirt, handing out leaflets about the ethical considerations of supporting animal-based circuses. How rude. How in your face. Why do they have to impose their beliefs on other people? God. They return home, having got through another day of ignorant bliss, shielded from the discomfort of having to look at their own role in the suffering of others, sheltered in their comfort zone of indignant indifference, comforted by the familiar tastes, sounds, and sights of animal exploitation, utterly unaware how carefully crafted all of this is, not thinking for just one moment that every single message they receive about meat, circus animals, zoo animals, or whatever everyday activity they engage in that uses and abuses and exploits animals, not for one moment do they think that those people are imposing their beliefs on them. Not for a moment. Just because the belief that says animals are here for us to use as food, as research tools and clothing and entertainment is widespread and pervasive, it doesn't mean it's fact. It's still a set of beliefs that happens to be perpetuated by the status quo, sold to them by the very industries that profit by this belief. But not for a moment do most people question the motives of the messengers of the animal exploitation industries. Unless a tiny crack appears, unless a tiny light starts to reveal itself underneath the veil, a crack so tiny but so powerful that it threatens the very foundation of their belief system, a crack so powerful that they know it must be sealed, corrected, removed as swiftly and as abruptly as possible. They know that if they let this crack grow, hell, they know that if they even acknowledge this crack, tiny though it is, it will rock their world. That tiny little crack is the voice of truth, and it comes in many forms. It might be as overt as a person spending several hours on a weekend night handing out leaflets about veganism, but it's most likely to be as seemingly innocuous as a word like corpse instead of meat, or pig instead of pork. It might be as small as seeing a steer grazing in a pasture and looking into his eyes and seeing life. You never know what it's going to take, but I can assure you that no matter how much we try to shield ourselves from the truth, it has a way of sneaking up on us. It has a way of piercing through our veil of conscious ignorance, forcing us to confront what we try so desperately to avoid. That's why vegans get hushed and shushed and silenced. That's why many people want us to shut up and hide away and stop telling the truth. And this is why we can't. It's the truth that people are afraid of. And I believe that people resist hearing about what happens to the animals, not simply because they think it will be too painful for them or because their stomachs are too queasy. No, they don't want to hear the truth or see the truth because they know it's the truth that will make them want to change. It's the truth they're afraid of because they know it will rock their world and challenge everything they believed before. They will be exposed. They will be vulnerable. They'll be unprotected. It's not that they're insensitive to animal suffering. It's that they're so sensitive to it that makes them close their eyes and their hearts. The very idea that animals suffer because of them is so anathema to them. It's so difficult to confront that it's easier not to go there at all. And in the face of truth, in the face of this truth, some people get it immediately. They throw off their veil willingly, reveling not in the fear of being vulnerable or exposed, but rather in the joy of being free and aware. They see it. They get it. They embrace it despite the pain of this awareness. Now, that's not to say that these people might still not have some blocks of their own, but they've evolved beyond where they were before. And now they see things differently and they act differently. So this is why I believe that the philosophy of meat eating is so weak. It can't hold up to the truth and the freedom of veganism. I believe that the commitment of the meat eater to meat is so tenuous that with the slightest challenge, even if that challenge is just in the form of the presence of a vegan, the slightest challenge can upset his very foundation. That is why I like the idea of perceiving meat eaters as blocked vegetarians. It's like they're sitting on a fence, and with the slightest touch, they can all fall over. They can fall over to the other side. Some will just fall, take their lumps, and arise newly awakened, newly cleansed. Some, however, will resist, and we'll come back to them in a moment. I've said before that I believe that we're all mirrors to one another and that we reflect back to each other things that we recognize in our own selves. Sometimes we're happy with the reflection, sometimes not so much. So when vegetarians are in a situation, including in a marriage or romantic partnership, where just by their very presence they incite ire or defensiveness in a non-vegetarian, I personally believe it's because the vegetarian is reflecting back to the non-vegetarian something he or she is uncomfortable with about him or herself. It has nothing to do with the vegetarian, but it can certainly feel as if it does. And when confronted by this reflection, the non-vegetarian, instead of examining what it is they're seeing, they try to destroy the messenger. We all saw this clearly when we were read Snow White as children, even if it was the Disney-fied version. We know that when the queen asks the mirror, who is the fairest of them all? And the mirror says, though the queen is indeed fair, that Snow White is the fairest. The mirror reflects back the truth, but the queen doesn't like it because she feels that it threatens her. So she seeks to destroy the truth reflected in this mirror. She seeks to destroy the very thing that she feels threatens her, Snow White. She seeks to destroy the truth, but of course, the truth cannot be destroyed. And so it lives and thrives, and the queen is subsequently vanquished. So too do we hold up mirrors for each other, and especially in the case of just being the vegan in the room, just by being there, it's upsetting to the safe foundation carved out by the non-vegetarian, particularly if you're in a romantic relationship where everything was going along nice and steady until one of the individuals decides that he or she doesn't want to eat animals anymore. The vegan doesn't have to do or say anything. Just by virtue of being that presence, being that truth, it's upsetting for those who see reflected back to them perhaps their own limitations, their own lack of consciousness, their own guilt. Many a vegetarian has been on the receiving end of jokes, jibes, digs, insensitive quips, and cruel comments. Just a week ago, I was dealing with a contractor here at my house who's doing some work, and I've dealt with this particular family of carpenters for a few years now, so they know me and I know them well enough. And one of the brothers has diabetes, and he gets pissy now and then when his blood sugar is low. So I know that when he gets irritable, it's not about me, but it's still annoying. Anyway, he was stressed out about some miscommunication issues we were having, and he walked away with an attitude. And as he got in his truck, he said they were going to grab some lunch. And then he said under his breath, we're going to get some meat. And I pretended not to hear. And I said, bye, have a good lunch. But he wanted to make sure I heard. So he said louder, we're going to get some meat. We're going to get some dead animals. Just like that. And it was so upsetting because A, he was taking his anger toward me out on innocent animals. And B, because he revealed such an immature and mean-spirited, ungracious part of himself. And I just find it so sad that we can be so small and treat each other so insensitively. I mean, the point is he wanted to hurt me. And like many people who want to just hurt you, he went right for the thing that he knows means the most to me. Now, again, I was hurt because he was being so insensitive, and he was being so insensitive to the animals, not because he was hurting me. And I think that's what a lot of non-vegetarians don't realize, that our desire to not eat animals has nothing to do with me, and it has nothing to do with you. Our desire to share the information about what happens to the animals just to make a bloody hamburger, and our despair about the torture they're forced to endure, is not as much anger at the meat eater as it is sadness and anger at the plight of the animals. It has everything to do with the animals. Here's a wonderful email I received from a podcast listener and sponsor a few months ago that illustrates this point. It was from a woman named Michelle. Hi, Michelle. And I love this email. Okay. So she wrote, quote, "I have been a vegetarian for 11 years and my husband has been for 5. I've always been proud of being vegetarian and considered it the best thing I've ever done. My husband, however, has recently become vegan and, in my mind, has been pressuring me to do the same. He gave me your cooking DVD and I've simply avoided it. I felt angry at him for judging me and accused him of not acknowledging the good choices that I do make. I've used the excuse that no one has to die for me to eat cheese, or it's not the cheese, it's the industrial cruelty that we need to be fighting against. And yeah, that last one makes me feel ridiculous now. Needless to say, I've been a bit defensive. I actually came up with a strategy of admitting that I was wrong and that, yes, what I was doing was bad, but that I had done all I could do and this was my personal limit. And I was getting pretty comfortable with my lie, telling myself that I was still a good person, that most people weren't even vegetarian, let alone vegan. Then I listened to several of your podcasts, one touching on the question of moral superiority, where you stated that it isn't about me. And suddenly I realized that my husband was doing something not for himself, but for the animals, and certainly not to me. So in my humbled state, I continued to listen, finally understanding that you can't claim personal choice if it affects someone else, that if given a choice, the cows would choose not to be milk machines, as surely as they would choose not to be killed. Of course, somewhere deep inside, I already knew these things, but it was your voice that led me to where I am now. I feel a bit ashamed of my past resistance, but even more, I feel empowered to make the change I need to make and now want to make. And I feel grateful that I'll have your support and look forward to your future podcasts. I'm going to check out your cooking DVD right now." Michelle is clearly evolved. A clearly evolved enough person to have made this realization, and I commend her for it. I'm so amazed by the humility of someone like Michelle. She realized that her husband's enthusiasm and commitment wasn't an attack on her. It wasn't even in praise of himself, but rather a reflection of the joy that comes with being awakened to the truth. My hope for non-vegetarians is that they can step back long enough to realize that someone's enthusiasm for their own veganism is not an attack on your meat eating. Though you may feel judged or guilty, it doesn't mean that the vegan is making you feel that way. The stuff we see reflected in that mirror gives us a great opportunity to take a look at ourselves and ask what it is we need to change, where we're stuck, and where we're unenlightened or unevolved. And this doesn't apply only to our food choices, obviously. For the vegan who's on the receiving end of the quips and obnoxious remarks, I want to make it clear that I'm not saying that people can't sometimes be just downright obnoxious. What I am saying, though, is that I personally believe that there is often something behind that obnoxiousness, and that in the case of the vegan meat eater dynamic, I think it's pretty clear what's going on, and it's helpful to look at it through that lens. A really honest email I received from a gentleman named Michael, hi Michael, touched on this. He wrote, "First and foremost, thank you for the lovely, incredible, and life-changing podcast. I love it. My brother became vegetarian during the Christmas holiday 2004, I think, and he showed me and my cousins a very grotesque PETA video. At the time, I called him a wimp and chose to give him hell about his new lifestyle choice. Looking back, I realize how much of an ass I was and how much of a genius he is. I downloaded your podcast looking for healthy food alternatives, not knowing I'd be saying goodbye to flesh forever." Again, I'm just so moved by this humility and honesty and openness of people like Michelle. And Michael, who just so very clearly recognized that they were blocked and they were resistant, that it was them, not the vegan in their life. Well, obviously, in the beginning, Michelle thought it was her husband who was being judgmental, and Michael thought it was his brother who was a wimp. But for one reason or another, they decided to look at their reflection and look at themselves rather than just stay stuck blaming the one who held the mirror. And it's that very moment, it's that for one reason or another moment, it's that jumping off point, that aha moment, that awakening that I'm most fascinated with. Because if we could figure out exactly how to inspire that moment in people, we'd be able to see change happen at a much more rapid pace. Frankly, I think the potential for the awakening is high, but it's all the stuff that gets in the way, all the static that makes the process go slow for people. We all have the potential for that awakening, but some of us have higher amounts of static than others. So after I received Michelle's initial email, I wrote back to her and I asked her what it was that made her actually listen to my podcast, despite the fact that she was resistant, despite the fact that she felt judged, and despite the feeling that she was doing enough. What made her listen? And here's what she wrote. It's funny. I was also thinking about why I even decided to listen, why I would risk the guilt or irritation that I knew I'd feel. I think it was because my husband had been listening to you earlier, and as I overheard, which he of course made sure I did, I felt drawn to what you were saying and how you were saying it. You were calm and reassuring and informative without sounding angry or judgmental. Just what I needed. I was craving a voice that I could relate to, an intelligent human voice. I thought maybe I'd enjoy what you had to say and just filter out all the vegan stuff. I'd been filtering out things in the meat eating world for years, adapting recipes and ideas to my own way of life. So how hard could it be? I just planned on ignoring the Life After Cheese podcast. But as I listened, I realized I couldn't filter it out. Here was someone speaking the truth in a kind, respectful, and intelligent way. Thank you, Michelle, and throwing out phrases like joyful vegan, which I have to admit I rolled my eyes at when I first heard you say it. I suppose I started out thinking that your podcast would be a little moment I took for myself, not a way to better myself or learn anything new necessarily, but a decadent little moment I spent listening to a female voice that shared some of my beliefs and didn't sound like a freak. I would just hear what you had to say and then throw out all of the things that didn't work for me, which, ironically, is just what I did. It just so happened that what didn't work for me was something different than I expected. And so that did it for Michelle. God, Michelle, you know how I feel about your process. I think it's just so remarkable, and I'm so glad you shared it with me. Some people embrace that piercing of the veil or that revelation, that reveal or awakening right away, and that's it for them. But some people do resist. Some people, when confronted by truth, resist even more. And in resisting, they may become even more averse to their own compassion, their own truth, whatever it is that it's awakening in there for them, whatever it is it's stirring up. They become even more averse to that than what seems normal even. You know, they become downright cruel and they become very hostile. The lady doth protest too much, methinks. Remember that line from Hamlet? The idea is that when you insist so passionately about something not being true, you actually reveal the opposite of what you're actually saying. So that when you find that people respond with real hostility and anger to the very idea of animal rights or veganism, you might want to keep in mind that they're just kicking and screaming at their own emerging transformation and they want to suppress it as much as possible. It's fear. Now, that doesn't mean that it's right, and it certainly doesn't mean that it's not painful, especially if you're on the receiving end of it, but perhaps it's just helpful to understand what's going on. I recently received an email from a listener named Lois, and I don't know if she's referring to her own situation here, and if she is, I am just so sorry she has to endure this. She wrote, "I'm not sure if you've addressed how to deal with a situation when someone's married to a diehard carnivore, someone who knows the health problems with meat and dairy, yet grills outside daily, someone who's aware that the animals suffer and endure torture and just laughs. Someone who has been repeatedly reminded, sometimes gently, sometimes in total disgust, of the tremendous destruction to the earth and her resources, but does not seem to care. Someone who will spit out a vegan meal onto his plate, give it to the family dog, and walk away whistling. Someone who will buy nothing but meat, dairy, and processed foods, and insist that the children eat it, sneaking it to them if necessary. It's very maddening, as I'm sure you can guess. God, Lois, that's a real tough one. I'm just so sorry. I just get rid of them, I think, is just all I can say. I'm kidding, okay? Calm down. I think this is a case of someone protesting too much, and he's clearly protecting himself and openly resisting. Now, in part two, I'll talk more about strategies to use in relationships where the vegan meat eater dynamic is actually causing problems. But let me just say briefly to Lois, and I'll expand on this later, that if you're on the receiving end of this, and it's safe to communicate openly with your partner, I think the first thing I would recommend is telling him that it hurts when he acts insensitively. Maybe not calling him insensitive, just telling him that it hurts when he does such things, especially when he spits out food you prepared, if this is the case that you're actually dealing with. And the second thing I would recommend is just not playing into his game, because he wants you to react. He's trying to get your goat, like with my contractor, who wanted to get me upset by saying the things he said. And not letting him, you know, I think is really important to understand that it has nothing to do with you. So we'll talk more about those strategies in another episode. Until then, try and keep in mind that as much as we have our own process and transition to work through as we experience our own awakenings, we do have to honor the transition of the people with whom we share our lives. Even though we may feel completely changed, we may forget to look at how our changes are affecting our partner. As much as we want him or her to be understanding and compassionate, I think we have to provide the same compassion and understanding to them. And I hope you don't think I'm letting people off the hook, but I've definitely seen what works and what doesn't work in these kinds of relationships. And no matter what the issue, it never helps to just point the finger and wish the other person would change. There are always things that we do either to perpetuate the problem or to solve it. I believe that in relationships, romantic or otherwise, we have the opportunity at every moment to become the people we want to be. I don't think that the best relationships are those where everyone's just comfortable. I believe that we come together to learn and to grow, to enhance each other's growth. And growth isn't always neat and clean. It's messy. People who have the most to teach us are often the ones who reflect back to us our own limits. So as much as meat eaters may see a mirror when they encounter a vegan and choose to accept or reject what comes up for them, so too do we, those of us who, for whatever reason, were blessed with the experience of a shift in consciousness, we need to also look at the mirror and what's held up for us when we look at a meat eater. What comes up? Is it impatience, judgment, self-righteousness, arrogance? What is it? I heard a wonderful strategy once about how to get what you want in a relationship, and I find it intriguing. I find it very effective, and it's definitely challenging for those of us who were not taught to approach relationships this way. The idea is that if you want your partner to have compassion or understanding or better communication or respect or patience or whatever it is that you're seeking in your relationship, instead of asking your partner to give these things to you, you give them to him or her instead. The idea is that, well, criticism of your relationship partner only increases the insecurity of that person, but also that only what we are not giving can be lacking in any situation. It's up to us, it's up to me, not the other person, to create what I'm seeking in the relationship by giving compassion or understanding or respect or patience or whatever it is that I'm seeking in the relationship. That's what I create and that's what I receive. Until next time, my hope is that we continue to rise above our own fear and our own insecurities, that we welcome the cracks that appear in our comfort zones, and that we remove the blocks that keep us from being fully present and fully conscious. My hope is that we ask ourselves just one simple question. What are we so afraid of? We might not have the answer right away, but I think it's time to start asking the question. This is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.